On June 5th, 1976, several towns and communities of southeast Idaho were forever changed. A huge disaster struck, destroying everything in its path. The Teton Dam broke. 5 counties were flooded and over 300 square miles. It traveled a distance of 155 miles and caused the death of 11 people. Was this place cursed before plans of building a dam even began? Is it still cursed? What happened to make so many fearful of going to this area? Join Mike and Melissa as they tell part one of the Teton Dam Spillway. Stay tuned. Destination Mystery presents Case File 31.
Listening to Mystery Media Group.
Yay!
Hello, I'm Melissa with Ghost Girl Memoirs.
And I'm Mike with Paranormal Treasure Hunter, and you are listening to Destination Mystery. We believe the paranormal is all around us, and every destination is an adventure. We never know what we're going to find in our adventure, but we do know that we'll have an interesting story to tell when we return. We're not going to the same locations or telling the same stories that you've heard over and over. Most of our destinations will be in locations you've never thought to look or investigate or explore. We are here to bring exciting and spooky new content, and we hope you will join us in our journey toward discovering the truth.
Very excited to introduce this new one. We've talked about it before, but we've done some more investigations down in this area and found some new and exciting things for us. But before we get into that, Melissa and I were talking about what to say on this about 10 minutes ago. And a good friend of mine, his son, just sent me a bunch of video footage of orbs and lights over Skinwalker Ranch. He apparently worked there for an internship and had some really cool videos of the lights and orbs that you hear about over Skinwalker Ranch. So we're in the process of if he will join us and share some of the experiences from Skinwalker Ranch. So that might be another very exciting episode for us.
It'd be really cool if Uncle George was still alive and we could talk to him.
Oh, yeah.
Share some.
I bet he's got all sorts of stories about that place. Mm-hmm. He was a sheriff in that area for years and years and years.
Long time. There are a lot of weird things that happen down in that area.
Not to get far off the topic, but we found some new information down at the Teton Dam down the road from where we grew up. And we spent a lot of time out there. Back in the 70s, it was built, and then it broke and flooded out a bunch of the surrounding areas. You know, there's not a lot to do around our neck of the woods, so we spent a lot of time out there rock climbing and hiking and climbing all over the dam. It's got a spillway that once you're down towards the bottom of it, you can, standing up, you're almost arm's length from reaching out and touching the ground in front of you. That's how steep it is. There's a tunnel that runs through the whole thing. One end is a great big 2.5-story cage, about 10 by 10, that was built so that underwater it would catch all the debris and not plug up the tunnel. And the other end had about a normal-sized doorway that where the water came through. And I assume they were going to eventually try and use it to make electricity. The water got through the tunnel, but it never got all the way up to the spillway gates. It never reached that level. And we spent a lot of time as kids playing around in there. And we'd always hear these stories about basically satanic worshipers screwing around down there. I never really believed it until I was older. And we had a couple of experiences. Didn't you have a few, Melissa?
Yeah, I had an experience. My senior year of high school, we went down there on Halloween. We encountered something pretty scary. At the time, I was like, oh, somebody's playing a trick on me. like, this isn't for real. But then after we found some information later on, I thought, I think we really did see what we saw. So, and I want to go into that more detail after we discuss the book.
It was a lot of fun, but I don't know what we actually encountered, if it was kids or if they were actually doing some voodoo practice. But a friend of mine, she had a little gray Colt. Remember that little car? It only sat two people, I think.
Yeah.
And it had a little room in the back. But we stuffed, 10 or 12 kids in there?
Yeah. And back I in the got day when you could.
Yeah. It was stuffed full of kids. We, as I got
kids,
in the car.
Kids, he means teenagers.
Teenagers, yeah. And when I got in to move the seat back, I accidentally grabbed the, it had a hatchback, and I accidentally released the hatchback, but it didn't pop. I got the seat scooted back, and we drove up the Teton Dam. We're going to see what's going on up there. We got about 100 yards away, and the biggest fire goes, roof, and just filled the whole spillway full of fire. Then these big, bright spotlights came on, and we're searching to try and find us because we turned our headlights off. And that's the time the hatch decided to pop open. And it came, woof, just as the fire came up, just as the spotlights came on. So everybody that was stuffed in the hatchback was in the front seat with us. So we turned that thing around, and I swear some of the kids got out and ran faster than that car would move. But sure. Man, it was so much fun. It scared the crap out of us. I mean, if a ghost has a comedic timing, that was it. Because that hatch, I did it clear back of the house. I don't know why it didn't pop open until 10 miles down the road and after all these bumps. But, oh, man, that was funny.
I mean, we now know that it's extremely haunted out there.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Yeah. Man, that was fun.
Why get such a kick out of getting scared?
I've always wondered that, but I thoroughly... Well, there's types of scared I don't enjoy, but for the most part, I enjoy a good adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
And that was one because, you know, clearly they opened the back of the car and were trying to get us.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was fun.
A little bit of history about the dam.
Dam.
Interest in building a dam in the Eastern Snake River Plain had arisen for many years to control spring runoff and provide a more constant water supply in the summer. The area had suffered a severe drought in 1961, followed by severe flooding in 1962. The Bureau of Reclamation proposed the dam be built in 1963, and Congress passed without opposition the following year. Construction on the dam began in 1972 and was completed by November 1975. Although several environmental groups had filed lawsuits to stop the construction, and geologists indicated that it was seismically active, the construction continued. Less than 1 year later, the dam experienced a catastrophic failure on June 5th, 1976, during its first filling. On Saturday, June 5th, 1976, at 7:30 a.m., a muddy leak appeared, suggesting sediment was in the water, but engineers did not believe there was a problem. By 9:30 a.m., the downstream face of the dam had developed a wet spot and began to discharge water at 20 to 30 cubic feet per second, and the embankment material began to wash out. Crews with bulldozers were sent to plug the leak, but were unsuccessful. Local media appeared on the site at 11:15 a.m., and officials told the county sheriff's office to evacuate downstream residents. Work crews were forced to flee on foot as the widening gap, now larger than a swimming pool, swallowed up their equipment. Can you imagine, like, escaping from your bulldozer and running and then seeing it just get swallowed up by all that water?
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
I ran into somebody 2 or 3 days ago, and I don't know how he got on that topic, but her dad or grandpa was one of the guys on the bulldozer. He just barely escaped with his life. I think they started running up the side of the hill. Those bulldozers just blew away like they were toys.
Interesting. We got a grandpa on one of our EVPs, so remind me about that later. They ran for safety. They actually had to be pulled up with safety ropes. And then at 11...
That's a pretty steep canyon. That'd be hard to get out of.
Yeah. And then at 11:55, the crest of the dam sagged and collapsed into the reservoir. And 2 minutes later, the remainder of the right bank, third of the main dam wall, disintegrated. and over 2 million cubic feet per second of sediment-filled water emptied through the breach into the remaining 6 miles of the Teton River Canyon, after which the flood spread out on the Snake River Plain, and by 8 p.m., the reservoir had completely emptied. 5 counties were flooded and over 300 square miles. It traveled a distance of 155 miles downstream. Failure of the Teton Dam caused the deaths of 11 people and approximately $400 million in damages. The dam was located in an area with highly permeable foundation material, and during the investigation of the failure, it was discovered that proper treatment of such foundation material was not implemented. It appeared that the dam's designers did not take the site-specific geological conditions into account when they developed the structure. And as a result, not only was the foundation treated inadequately, but the treatment was also inconsistent. The post-failure review panel also determined that the rock surface at the right abandonment was not adequately sealed under the dam's impervious core. In addition, geologists indicate that 5 earthquakes had occurred within 30 miles of the site in the previous 5 years, 2 of which had been of significant magnitude. Volcanic tunnels and caves had been found all along the Teton River Basin, and this information was provided by the Bureau of Reclamation before construction was completed, but their concerns were dismissed. So,
didn't know about the earthquakes. That's new to me.
I didn't either till I went back and looked. Since the collapse of the dam, the spillway site has been left abandoned. So there's isolated buildings and structures still intact. Authorities have tried to seal them off, but vandals still find a way to access the site. And as teenagers, it was one of our favorite things to do. Although back then, they hadn't really tried to seal anything off.
When we first started going there, they just had some bars across the openings. Uh-huh. Down at the bottom of the spillway, but you could skinny through it and then you could walk all the way through that tunnel. It was round. It was about 6 feet in diameter, because if you walked right down the center, I wouldn't hit my head. And halfway through that tunnel was a hole in the ceiling, and you had to use a rope to get up in through that hole. And the hole went up and over into a room that controlled 2 doors that opened and closed in that tunnel. And then it went through a shaft and then another room. They weren't very big rooms. And then there was ladders all the way to the surface. And at the surface, there's a big concrete building that was the controls for the spillway gates. And we climbed in through the spillway, got all the way up to the top into that room. And at the time, you couldn't access the room from the outside. You had to go all the way through because it's pretty thick concrete and pretty thick steel doors. But over the years, somebody's ripped the doors out, so they concreted the hole over, so you can go in the room, but you can't go down the stairs. And for whatever the reason, I find that place fascinating. The whole infrastructure, the whole big design, it's been very interesting to me.
You know, there never should have been a dam built in that area. They had a lot of concerns about it before it even started, but they had to pay for all the houses that were destroyed, right?
They had
to rebuild everything.
Into the billions, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I used to know the number, but I can't remember now.
If you go to Wilford or Rexburg, you're not going to find a house really that's much older than, I mean, there's a few clear out, but most of them were built in the 70s.
Yeah. You can still see places out in Wilford where stuff is still sitting from the flood too. Not a lot.
It's a big part of the history in the town that we grew up in, and it impacted and affected a lot of people's lives. My mom was actually pregnant with me when the dam broke, and we had this big picture window in front of our house. So the cops had come, said, "Hey, you need to evacuate." So she was packing some stuff real quick. And she remembers watching that water kind of come up over the hill, and she thought she was a goner, but then it stopped and kind of went towards Rexburg. But she saw this huge big black wall of water. And luckily our house wasn't one that was in that flood, but it was really close.
It's in less than a mile, wasn't it?
Yeah.
1 to 2 miles.
Yeah. Just the people on the other side of the road from us got hit pretty hard. The whole time we're growing up, there's stories about that flood and the things that happened. And there was also, like we've mentioned on several occasions, about the satanic worshiping that we had heard rumors about that had been done there. In fact, we talk a lot about it on episode 12 when we do the interview with Chuck Zukowski on the cattle mutilations. We had a whole string of cattle mutilations that happened around the same time.
It was during before, during, and after the Teton Dam.
And we heard a lot of stories from our parents and our grandpa and uncles who owned a dairy farm, but we never really remember much about the mutilations other than there were times that we had to go stay at our cousin's house. They all gathered at one house for the night so the uncles and stuff could watch over the cattle. But that's all I really remember.
Do you remember doing that?
Yeah,
I do. I don't remember that. Maybe I just didn't know.
That's what we were doing. Well, they made it sound like it was a party. Oh, we're going to have this big cousin sleepover. So we weren't too terribly concerned, but that's what it was. Oh, I do remember a couple of Halloweens where we couldn't go trick-or-treating. The sheriff's office advised nobody to go out and go trick-or-treating because there was so much cattle mutilation activity and they had so many problems with satanic worshiping.
And dead animals found here and there.
Yeah.
Skinned animals all over the place. A lot of them by the dump in that area. Mm-hmm. A lot of them down in Teton Canyon.
And I mean, the community that we grew up in was all dairy farms. So everybody owned cows and horses. It was kind of a scary time when you don't know what's going on. And
some of the farmers after at towards dark would close down the roads that were near their house. They wouldn't let anybody through that they didn't know. And they stopped each car and asked who they were and what they were doing and what was going on. These were farmers and cattle ranchers, not the police.
Right.
Just people that owned land in the area. They wouldn't let anybody down the roads because of this.
Yeah, they were losing a lot of money. Cattle aren't cheap.
And it was scaring a lot of people because nobody knew what was going on. There were reports of strange lights. There were reports of strange people, hooded people, but nobody knew what was going on. Nobody had any idea. Nothing was ever proven. Nobody was ever caught or arrested. There was just nothing. I remember my uncle telling us that they put the cattle in a circle and they would walk around during the night around the circle with their guns. That's how we ended up with that nice rifle of daddy's.
Yeah.
Was because of that. But my uncle said that the next morning they found where somebody had been hiding in a ditch not far away. Like they're trying to sneak up, but never quite dared because they were too close to people, I guess. There were a lot of reports of black helicopters in the area at the same time, too. And years later, when I started researching this more because I was interested, I asked Mom about it. And she's like, you know what? Now that you mention it, I do remember seeing black helicopters across the street in that field where the neighbors lost their cows.
I remember her telling us about that, too.
I remember right out of high school, they had completely cemented off the spillway. And so we climbed up the cage. I call it a cage, but it's a big structure to keep the rocks and trees and crap from going into the hole. But it's 2.5 stories. It's like something you would put King Kong in.
Yeah.
Big, thick concrete beams, big steel bars so that water can get through, but not trees and branches. But we had to climb up to the top, go out of the middle, and there's kind of a hole there that we have to lower ourselves through the hole, you know, 2.5 stories up, monkey bar over to the edge, climb down to a support concrete beam, which was 2.5 feet wide. Then you'd crawl out on there, lower yourself down, and kind of jump down to the next one and grab the bars and do that twice. And then we could get into the hole. And we walked all the way through that hole, goofed around. We had a bunch of kids with us. Were you with us on that one? You remember?
I don't think I was.
We got all the way to the end, then the girls just started crying, and we could hear something the other end of that tunnel, and it was like chanting and howling. Just everybody tore out of there, and the girls are just sobbing, and I was the last one to go, and I was kind of running out the end, but then I hit my head and lost my hat. I had to go back and get my hat. Then it was just mad. So bring it on now, but we got all the way out to the end, and by then it was pitch black outside, and we had to crawl up. They're about 8 feet between the cement.
At least. Might even been more.
Curtis, he's pretty athletic. He got to the first one, partway up the second one, and then didn't continue anymore. how on earth I ever got in and out of there is beyond me, because there's no way on earth I could do it now. But I got to the top and I was pulling myself up and through the hole. But as I was bunching up my muscles to pull myself, couldn't fit back through the hole. So I kind of had to, on the count of three, let go so I could loosen up enough to get through. And then my friends had to pull me out the rest of the way. And then we had to monkey bar back down and then get up top of the hill where the car was in the pitch black. I don't think we had flashlights. We weren't that bright at the time. But man, well, that was an experience.
I said, I can't imagine doing that without flashlights. It's dark out there. There's no lights, nothing.
We had to have had one because we were inside the tunnel, but, you know, we weren't lit up like we are today. Why we did, I don't know. What we were thinking, I don't know. But man, it started out being fun, but towards the end, there was something, you know, none of us felt like we should ever go back there again. So it was years later before we ever went back there again, because it just wasn't right.
You know, it could have been people actually performing some weird rituals and chantings and stuff, or it could be residual activity.
The thing was, though, is there was no vehicles around, and there's not somewhere you could walk to. And you could only get in the one end. And they were down just the tunnel, not in the rooms, but down in the tunnel. But in those rooms, there was obvious pentagrams, dead animals, candles, tarot cards. All that stuff was just scattered all over the place down there. So those rumors were probably pretty close to being true.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. I don't know if you remember, but the occult was kind of a big thing. Kids were, you know, fascinated by it. And maybe it's just because we were in an area that we didn't have anything else to do, but that's how kids would get into trouble. And I remember one kid that I went to high school with was messing around with a Ouija board and stuff. He was possessed. The story that we heard was that he was possessed and he never did come back to school. Do you remember that?
I remember our teachers talking about one. I don't know if that's the same one you're talking
about. Probably the same one.
My fascination with it isn't, I mean, I love old structures. I love tunnels and caves. And so I really enjoyed exploring that. I didn't really believe the stories until I went in there. My fascination isn't with this by any means, the satanic worship. I am curious how prevalent that was in the area, though, for an area where it's mostly Christians. There were sure a lot of crap going on there that I just didn't know about. And we probably should have stayed away from there, but I didn't really believe it. It was, I mean, you could hike, you could shoot your gun, you could roll rocks down the hillway, you could float the river.
I mean, my fascination wasn't really with the satanic rituals and stuff either, but there was just a lot of places to go explore down there. There was a completely different vibe at night.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was a completely different world. I do have to admit, though, I'm quite fascinated with the cattle mutilations, not the mutilating, but the fact that people got away with it and there's no record of an arrest, of a sighting. Nobody has any real idea what's happening there. That's what I find interesting. We know nothing or very, very little about it. Maybe an unhealthy fascination, but
yeah,
I find it interesting.
But at night you'd go out there and it was completely different vibe. And I remember one of our trips out there, we were hiking down the spillway part, just kind of walking down. And I kept turning around because I thought for sure we were going to see somebody standing on that concrete there as we turned around. And
where the ramps were?
Yeah.
Or they're not the ramps, the gates?
The gates, yes, where the gates drop. Man, there is somebody here with us. I can feel it. I don't know who it is, but I thought I was going to turn around and see him. And then we were looking out over the edge and across the canyon, there were people with these really bright strobe lights, almost like they were signaling something. It's hard to explain, but I can tell you this. I'll tell you that I will investigate that place anytime during the day. No problems. I don't know that I'm ever brave enough to investigate that at night. And I've done some pretty creepy places.
Should we talk about what happened that last time we went down at night?
Yeah.
We decided we need to take my mom home one night. We took my mom home, like, hey, let's stop by the dam. And because it was a full moon and you can drive right down to the bottom, right to the base of the dam. And you can see across the river into this cage that we've been talking about up again. And I got a pretty bright flashlight. So we drove down there in the dark and we were going to shine the flashlight across and see if the tunnel was open. If it was, we'd go back around to the other side and go through. And on our way there, I'm with Melissa and my daughters. And I was reminded of a story that my cousin told me 20 years ago or more. My cousins had gone down there. They drove down there in dark and the car died on them. And they couldn't, for the life of them, get it started. And this is before cell phones. So my cousin's dad had a feeling that he needed to go down and pick the kids up. And sure enough, he was right. He went down the bottom, got them, couldn't get the car started either. So they just left it there and they come back in the morning. They really just wanted to get out of there. And so the next day they drove down and they got the car started right up and took it home and couldn't figure out why it wouldn't start. I was telling my kids this and Melissa this, as we are driving down on the south side, there is a boat ramp that they made so that when this reservoir was full, you could boat up and down the Teton River. So we're driving down that, telling the story to the kids, and we look off to the right-hand side and there's a bunch of people. We could see a campfire and a couple of like headlamps down there. I'm like, oh, somebody's down here having a party. And we drive to the bottom, right up to the edge of the river where we can see the cage across the way. We get out of the car, I leave it running, leave my door open, shine my flashlight across, and it looks like the hole is opened up and then you can get in. So we get back in the car. We weren't out of the car, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Not long. Everybody climbs into the car and I get sitting down. I got one leg into the car. I'm bringing my left leg in and I'm reaching out to grab the handle to the car and the car shuts off. Just dies.
And I'm the key still in the ignition. It was still turned on. We never turned it off.
Yeah. Still in the on position. Even the lights killed off, right?
Yep.
And it's one of those cars that even if you turn the car off, the lights stay on for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. This, everything died. And they're like, ha ha, very funny. Don't do that. Now's not the time to screw around. I'm like, I didn't do anything. I just got in here. So I get in the rest of the way, shut the door. We're like, crap, what do we do now? But I turned the car key back to the off position and turned it back on and it started. Thank goodness. I don't think anybody at that point still believed me. But I did nothing to the car.
I had a mini panic attack.
I think everybody did. I had a little one. What are we going to do? I am not walking out of here. A, I'll never be able to do it. And B, scary. We turn around and we're making there's a big loop that goes back up towards the boat ramp. I said to the kids, I got to lock the door. And I didn't tell them why I needed to lock the doors, but I thought I need to lock the doors and we need to get out of here. And as I was locking the doors, the reason I did it is because I had this thought, what are we going to do if those people decide to block off the boat ramp and not let us pass? And I thought, why on earth did that thought come to my mind? I didn't think it coming down, but it came very strongly. So I was going through the options. Do I run them over? What do I do? And I look over to the left-hand side, and these people are running up the hill towards us. And I said that, and Melissa's like, nuh-uh. So I backed the car up, and here they are. They weren't that far away.
And as he backs the car up, they're like right there to the ledge. And I'm like, what the crap?
I didn't want you to think I was messing with you again. These people really are booking it up the hill towards us.
I mean, a really steep hill.
Yeah.
They got up that hill quick.
They had to have been
freaking Olympians.
Yeah. And we took off, went up the hill, got out on the road. And we were discussing what was happening. Once somebody says, hey, maybe we should have stopped. Maybe they needed help. And my youngest daughter's like, Dad, did you feel like they needed help? No. What did you feel like? I feel like we need to get the crap out of there. And she's like, well, there's your answer then. There was no thought of they needed help. There was every thought was we have to leave.
It was now. Like danger, danger. Yeah.
Yeah. My spidey senses were going off. So we took off out of there. Listen to your inner being.
Do you remember as we got onto the main road, finally, all of a sudden this car came out of nowhere and tailed us the whole time?
Yeah, I remember that. I was reading a book. I think it was that
Lunsford?
George Lunsford, yes. Uh-huh. He had a story about a car that tailed people, and it kind of reminded me of that. We got to talk about this other thing that happened there, broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
We're in my Ranger. We had taken it down to the bottom middle of the day, and we're coming back up the same boat ramp, Same spot. And what do we see on the road ahead of us?
There was a woman in running gear running up the hill. We noticed her because we were like, damn, it's hot.
It's hot. It's steep.
Who would want to do that?
Everybody saw her. Yeah. Why would you do that when you got a four-wheeler?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody saw her. Every single person saw her. You can finish that if you want.
We drove up the hill in the Ranger and we're like, where did she go? There's no way she could have been running faster than the Ranger. And when you get up to the very top, you can either go right or go straight. And she wasn't anywhere to be seen. Either she went down the side of the mountain, like down the cliff.
If she did, she died.
Yeah. I don't know where she just disappeared. And I mean, I only saw her for maybe a few seconds, but I saw her enough to know that she was wearing, she had a ponytail in, she had a white cap on, and she was running up the hill.
We all saw her. And then we got to the top of the hill. Then we were all in our back of our minds, where did she go? You can go two directions.
I thought we would have passed her on our way up.
Yeah. So she got abducted. She wasn't really there at all, or she fell off the cliff and died.
So we were trying to find if, you know, a runner had ever been killed out there or abducted out there or whatever. And we couldn't really find anything, but there've been a lot of weird disappearances from around there. So who knows? I don't know.
That was weird. Because we didn't pay much attention. Oh, here, there's a runner. It's hot. Wait, she's stupid. We get up there and on.
Yeah. Never saw her.
I think we called it a day after that, didn't we?
We went to the other end.
Well, that's true.
We actually got in the tunnel finally.
Well, you got in. I couldn't get my fat butt through the hole. It was kind of small.
So for years, that tunnel had been concreted in and you couldn't get in there. We had heard recently that somebody had kind of opened it back up. And so we scaled down the side of the other ravine or whatever you call it. And we were able to squeeze through the bars and through the small little area that they had chipped away at. But there was only a few of us that were able to squeeze through. And we thought, okay, well, here I am with two teenage girls. We're going to go down this tunnel that we've never been in before. I'd never been in there as a teenager. So it was my first time there. It echoed so bad. So it was really hard to tell what was us and if there was something at the very end. We walked and walked and walked. We had to squeeze under another door that was about halfway down. It started getting really muddy. There was a lot of water. Since I'd never been down there and didn't really know how much further it was, I didn't feel comfortable going much further because I didn't know how much water there would be or if we'd be in danger of blood coming through or whatever. So we decided just to stop there and do an EVP session. And we didn't get much, but I did get one that was kind of interesting. But, you know, our questions kind of revolved around, hey, did you work here? Were you here when the flood happened? Stuff like that. Okay, I'm going to play this clip. It was in the tunnel and there's a lot of echo in that tunnel. So
did you work here? Did you work here?
To me, at the very end, it sounds like Grandpa. And I don't know why, but you mentioned that your friend's grandpa was one of the people that drove a bulldozer when they were trying to seal up the hole.
Mm-hmm.
When we were done with our EVP session, we walked back, and this happened as we were walking back.
Oh, what was that?
It was you.
That pop wasn't me.
It wasn't us.
It wasn't me. Footsteps are getting faster.
Yeah, we're rocking fast.
I just peed my pants.
Yeah, so like we said, it was really echoey in there, and the dog was at the end of the tunnel with Mike, and I guess he heard us walking fast, and he got excited and barked, and I was not expecting that.
Scared. He was having anxiety. He wanted to be with Sierra. He didn't want to go down the creepy hole, so he didn't know what to do. He hopped in and out of there a couple of times, and then he barked, and we hear this scream. Blast of air come out of the inn.
Do you want to tell about the shadow you captured as Sierra was coming out?
Oh, as you could tell, it had a funny echo. So I was just recording the echo. And I'm leaning inside the hole holding my phone. And it started capturing shadows. I don't know what they were. Going across from one end of the tunnel to the other end, back and forth. And then it'd go towards you guys and it'd come back. And I will send Melissa the video and she could put it up on our
website.
My body cavity took up most of that hole. So there wasn't any or very little light coming through the hole into the tunnel. It was very interesting. I don't know what. I tried to get it again and I couldn't get it to work. So
Sierra called to her dad. Dad, is that you? And then you saw something like go towards her, a shadow go towards her. That's kind of the video captures.
Yeah.
And then she comes out. But man, had I known that shadow was walking towards us,
That
was weird.
That loud bang pop sound, whatever it was, that was not us. That wasn't me.
I was making
that noise because it sounded cool as it'd go down the tunnel and then it would come back to me. Uh-huh. So that's why I started recording, because it sounded cool on my end that I could hear your footsteps, and I wanted to record you guys coming out of the tunnel. But either side, something kept darting back and forth and going down there. So
I do have one other EVP, but it's just a weird frequency that came up, and I don't know why. It's just weird. It was on the EVP recorder. And that was just from the EVP recorder, not even from the spirit box. I don't know what that was. Down in a tunnel that has no radio signal, no cell signal.
Oh, no.
This concrete. How thick do you think that concrete was? I mean, it's...
Oh, 6 feet thick. It is half a mile below the surface. Just the two ends are exposed. I have no idea. That was interesting.
Yeah, it was really strange, but it was fun to finally be able to get back in there after all these years of not being able to.
Let's talk about the last thing that we found, the newest thing, and then maybe we'll save this book for a continuation of this.
Okay.
So Michelle from Time Forgot was looking up information on the Teton Dam, and whatever source she found stumbled upon and the name the Devil's Cave. And as much as we'd been around there, we had never heard of it or seen it. So Melissa asked a friend of hers, because he's a deputy, and he's like, oh yeah, we've been there. He marked it on a map for us. And so that's what we were doing when we were riding the ranger around and we saw the jogger lady. We were trying to find where that cave was. And we drove quite a ways and we found one spot on the canyon wall that we looked over with binoculars and we could see it. But unless you were standing in that spot, you can't see it. Can't see it from the river. You can't see it from anywhere else except for this one spot.
I never would have known it was there had I not trying to find it.
Yeah, we never would have found it. You can't see it from the river. You can't see it from very many places. And so we had to leave for the day, but we came back a couple weeks later. Melissa unfortunately had to leave early, so she didn't get to go over there.
But I was so mad.
We strapped my canoe on top of the ranger, and we drove around and drove down the boat ramp and kind of overlanded it to the very edge of the river as far as we could go. And we had to paddle across the river to find this cave. Somebody filled in the front of it with rocks and made a little window, a little door, put cement on it. Inside was a old barrel they turned into a stove, had a tea kettle, had a Boy Scout old time dish of some sort. And somebody had been living there for a while, it looked like. There's a spot that like a hole in the side of the wall where it looks like they started to use a fire, then put in the barrel. We know nothing about that place, but it was awfully fun to find because I don't know how many times we've been over there and never knew it was there.
What you guys found over in that cave kind of left us with more questions, because the whole reason we were looking for that cave was because one of the articles that we read talked about, you know, all the satanic worshiping that happened there, all the cattle mutilations that happened there, the Teton Dam bursting. And they had mentioned that that place had just kind of been cursed. And it all started with what they had called the Devil's Cave, which we had never heard of before.
Which they had to have been using before the Teton Dam was ever even built or thought of. And one of the thoughts we had was, well, there's a lot of bad vibes there, but was it always been a bad vibe? And so they were attracted to that area? Or did they bring the bad vibe to the area? It's just a question we wondered about.
And I kind of assumed that that cave, from what I was reading, the cave was used for some of those satanic worshiping rituals and stuff. And that's kind of all where it began. And so I kind of felt like it was brought in. And that's how the bad vibes began.
That area seemed to be the epicenter of a lot of this stuff that went on in the surrounding communities and even states.
Yeah.
Why are there? I think that was the epicenter. I was introduced by a good friend of mine, a book, which I think we'll go into next time. But his last three or four chapters is about that whole area. And this was written by a sheriff in a nearby community. And it cleared up a lot of questions that I had about that.
Yeah, but then, for me too.
Then added so many more, but right. I got a better understanding of what was going on. I really didn't know how bad it was there. I guess mom had a reason to be scared of it. You know, we heard stories, didn't believe them, but I think they were true.
Yeah, I think this book actually corroborates a lot of the stories we were told, corroborates a lot of the things that happened to us when we went out there. This is all a true story, true events. When you came upon this book and showed it to me, I was like, holy cow.
Bet I read that 5 times now.
Yeah, it blew my mind. I have it all marked up. I'm like, oh, my
God. Oh, I do too.
This makes so much more sense now. And people told us was true.
If I had studied my work at school, like I read those 2 chapters and marked it up, I'd have done a lot better in school.
Do you remember when you talked to Chuck Zukowski about doing your school reports on cattle mutilation?
Yeah.
Teachers thought you were crazy.
I think it scared him a little bit.
Book and say, yeah. No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Well, I think they thought it was weird that a kid that age was interested in that. But my interest was, how did they do that and not get caught?
Yeah.
I guess I have mysterious things have always fascinated me where there's no real good answer. There's a place in Utah that I ride 4-wheelers every year if I get to. And you ride up through these canyons and through these washes and it comes out and we are miles from anywhere. And to the best of my knowledge, what lay beyond was a mystery. And that place thoroughly fascinated me because in my imagination, it was tunnels and washes and canyons and it just went on forever and ever and ever. But the last time I was there, we drove around and we weren't that far from a town and a freeway. And it kind of ruined it for me because, you know, if I go another 15 miles, 20 miles, then it's civilization again. But the first few times I went there, it was mysterious. It was vast and open and a new frontier. And I was so excited about that.
Next week, we'll continue our discussion on the spillway and the new information we found.
If you enjoy our show, please like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. We will be introducing other Mystery Media Group guests in our upcoming episodes, along with weekly bonus material. If you'd like to see more pictures and evidence from our adventures, visit www.destination-mystery.com. You'll find a link to our blog, as well as a link for merch and contact information. Until next time, find your own destination.
Solve the mystery.
This is a production of Mystery Media Group. Yay!